get ready to mark your calendars for the first ever Grid City Music Fest, brought to you by The State Room Presents and Grid City Beer Works, located at the Commonwealth Room on 2100 South next to the Track Central Point Station in South Salt Lake. Grid City Music Fest represents what South Salt Lake's new Creative Industries Zone is all about. There will be live bands, mouth-watering drinks from South Salt Lake's breweries and distilleries, fun games, and awesome vendors to meet. There are 6 nights of the Grid City Music Fest for everyone to enjoy. Saturday, July 16th, which is a free night, Sunday, July 17th, Friday, August 5th, Saturday, August 6th, Saturday, August 20th, and the last day, Sunday, August 21st. Head to GridCityMusicFest.com for your tickets. Come say hi and hang out with all of us. This is an event you do not want to miss out on. Until the next Music Fest, my friends. You're listening to The Taste Masters, where we sit down and learn from artists within the world of craft beer, liquor, and various fermentation techniques. All right, friends, we're here in the hot heart of Hopkins, and I'm here joined with my friend, Chad Hopkins. Chad, welcome, my man.
Hey, David.
Long time no see.
Well, kind of, but...
Sort of, right. Well, okay, last time we were on air, we were in a competition about who has the best hair.
Oh, that's right, with Brad Wheeler.
With Brad Wheeler, right? And who ended up winning that competition? Me, you, or Derek?
Oh, you did,
yes,
for sure.
Yes.
But there were also votes for all three.
Yes.
As best hair in the industry.
Okay, but so. I mean, it's pretty good debate. I think we all have great hair.
Agreed.
100%. I'm trying to think who else has great hair in the industry. I'm
all unique as well.
Yeah. But hey, welcome, brother. Congratulations on being awesome. And
thanks.
I miss you.
I miss you too, man.
But here we have in front of us someone that I've tried to interview for a long time now, Mr. Sean Peterson. Sean, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you very much. Happy
Dude,
to be here.
I haven't seen you for, what, a couple weeks, maybe?
Yeah, it's been about that.
But I finally get you on. How long have I tried to get you on this podcast?
Oh, man, I think we talked, last year, October, November-ish, maybe?
I'm telling you, I think it's been like almost a year.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And you finally, I finally got you on.
Yeah.
What made you finally like, all right, I got to do this?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah. listened to a lot of your other podcasts, was really impressed.
So I had to win you over a little bit.
No, that's not it at all. Just yeah, just super impressed. So
thanks, man. Thanks for coming here. And you've come a long way since the past year. A lot has happened. And we'll get to it. You brought a bunch of beers for us today. And you brought a bunch of Squaws and Wasatch beers.
I did.
So let's just... Where do you currently work right now, Sean?
I'm currently working for the co-op for Wasatch and Squatters. So we're part of the Canarchy Collective. And it's been a lot of fun. Really, really big learning experience.
Oh, hell yeah. And congratulations on the medals, my man. You guys took, what, 3 medals barely at the Idaho Beer Fest?
Had, I think, nice. Gold and 2 silvers, or 2 golds and a silver, something like that.
Wow, no big deal. And Chad's holding one right now. You guys, I believe, took a silver in this one, right?
Or like Strawberry Blonde?
I think we took the gold and the Devastator, and then the silver going to be the Hell's Keep and the Strawberry Blonde.
Oh,
got so me over here.
Strawberry Blonde, nice you guys pack. Threw a shit ton of strawberry in that, right?
Yeah, yeah. We use a fair amount of puree in there.
So. Whose idea was this again? Was this Sandball's idea?
No, I actually asked him. So he was texting us the medal announcements as they were going, and he texted us that one, and I asked, was that your recipe? And he said, no, not this one. But Ryan was the mastermind behind our Top of Maine, our raspberry ale right now.
Ah, that's right. So Sandball, because Sandball, since last time Sandball, I wish he was here, but last time we had Sandball come on, he wasn't the head brewer. Last time he was on, Steve was the head brewer, and Sandball got the head brewer position. So congrats on Sandball. And how's it working for Sandball, by the way?
He's killing it. He's doing a great job. Filling in awesome. I never got to meet Steve, so I was a little bit disappointed. I mean, obviously that's not off the table now, but I think Stanbaugh's doing a great job. He's been very welcoming and definitely a nice educator coming on board
Hell
here.
Yeah. So let's smell this and break it down.
This might be my only Wasatch beer I haven't had.
And I'll state going into this, strawberry is by far my least favorite fermented fruit.
Why is that? Because you get Band-Aid up the ass all the time?
I can't say Band-Aid. It just always comes across super medicinal to me. Hmm. Like, when I drink cherry juice, I think medicinal, but when I have like a nice cherry lambic, the medicinal is, you know, anywhere else but in what I'm drinking.
Interesting.
And yeah, strawberry just for some reason.
Yeah, strawberry is difficult to work with for sure. So
strawberry jam on the nose.
I think it's a wonderful blending fruit. But this is actually a really refreshing beer. Really happy with this.
Oh, that's nice.
I got some really nice white bread to it.
That malt at the very end, I like that. And then strawberry comes back. Wow.
Yeah, it kind of comes in at the end there.
That's nice because it still tastes like a beer.
It's beer-flavored beer still.
Yeah, we just need to add some lactose to it, right?
I about spit that everywhere.
This is a great beer. This is a great beer. No lactose is needed.
Yeah, super crushable.
This is a summertime beer. This is a camping / float the river beer.
Yeah.
Is this in the regular rotation now?
I believe so.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't think this one's going to be going away anytime soon.
Simple label. Got a little strawberry blonde, strawberry color, a little bit of orange. Not bad, my friend.
You know, it's easy drinking. This is one of the few strawberry beers that I actually really enjoy. So,
speaking of which, Sean, so last time we had a chit-chat about beer, you're kind of picky on beers, right?
I am
you
a little
like
bit
a
picky.
Certain style that
do.
Most don't, correct? You don't like the seltzers, the IPAs, the crushable crispy boys, right?
I like the IPAs. I'm an IPA guy. I'm a sour guy. I'm a Belgian guy for sure.
Okay.
I'm definitely much more drawn to what yeast and hops can do than I am. Like, obviously, malt's a very important aspect of brewing.
Sure.
But yeah, I think there's just so much variation on yeast and hops out there. I think there's just an endless world to play with.
Okay.
And that's what kind of gets me excited about beer. It's trying new things.
Nice.
Trying to do stuff that people haven't done before.
So favorite style of all time?
Favorite style? I'm going to stick with Chad on this one. It's a Goose.
Oh,
100%.
Yeah, that's Goose.
I don't think that's ever been said on this. A Goose, huh?
If I could drink the same beer every day, if I had to drink the same beer every day, it's going to be a Goose.
Really?
I'll take a couple cases of that on my desert island.
Mm-hmm. Look at you.
100%.
And have you ever made one?
I haven't made a traditional true Goose. I am working with some fun lambic stuff right now, but kind of putting my own spin on them. I mean, I have a lot of respect for the traditional aspect of lambic brewing and kind of what that means to those people. But I think there's some good room for some experimentation and definitely room to grow there. So.
I like that, Sean. This is awesome. Chad, have you ever met Sean? Is this the first time you're meeting Sean?
No, I haven't Sean at Toast Barrel a while ago. I went in there when I heard they had a small batch brewer in there doing small batch stuff. I'm like, I got to check this out. Because I love small batch beer. So
that leads us to some questions there, Sean. So let's talk about before you became into the beer world, where you come from? Like, what are you from? Utah local? Like,
I am a Utah local, born and bred. Moved around quite a bit once I got into my older years. 19, I moved to Colorado for a few years. And that kind of really opened up my door into craft brewing. I became a religious Avery drinker. My friends and I, the original Avery Brewery, my friends and I would go down there like every Friday, and they usually had anywhere from 2 to 4 beers that were north of 15%, and they would do 5-ounce samples for $1.
Okay.
And us being young, broke college kids, we could get hammered off of like $8, leave 100% tip and walk out of there feeling like kings, or I should say stumble out of there feeling like kings. But that was kind of my introduction to craft beer, and then never dropped it after that, so...
So then how did you come back to Utah? What brought you back?
Just time to move on. I kind of felt like I was spinning my wheels in Colorado and wanted a change of scenery. So I moved back for a little bit, just get my head on my shoulders, get my priorities straight. And then shortly after that, I got recruited to actually play in a lacrosse team at a school out in Virginia.
Hey.
So I went out to Virginia for a little while, played some lacrosse, went to college out there, and... it is basically the BYU of the East Coast. It was Southern Virginia University. I mean, we had to sign an honor code and everything just like
really?
You do at BYU. And so it was not an easy thing to find craft beer and consume craft beer when I lived out there. But we made it work. We figured it out.
Nice. And then after Virginia, you came back to Utah?
Came back to Utah.
How old
were
you
since.
When you came back to Utah?
24.
Okay. What brought you back to Utah?
Dating a beautiful woman.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was her name?
Name is Sammy. She's my wife.
Hey, shout out Sammy.
Yeah, so we started dating kind of the summer before I left for Virginia. And, it wasn't, how do I say this the right way? I don't want to make her mad. I wasn't exactly looking for a relationship at that time, but she gave me a reason to want a relationship. And so, left it a little open-ended when I went out to Virginia. But then when I came back for Christmas break, the plan was to spend some time with my family, and I ended up just hanging out with her the whole time. And we've been going strong ever since
Couldn't
then.
Find so better.
I that's, couldn't
that's,
find better.
That's she's, right. She's, no, I got
she's,
you.
She's the best girl I've ever met. She's
hell
awesome.
Yeah, I like that, man.
Nice.
And then here in Utah, what's it like going to Colorado, then Virginia, then Utah? Like, what's the dynamic, the culture? Like, how's that different?
I mean, the beer culture in Colorado is obviously awesome. I mean, they have a brewery basically on every corner out there. I think there's a lot of the innovations that have pushed America along in craft brewing, I think, kind of originated in Colorado. I mean, you look at New Belgium and stuff like that, and they were kind of the ones to really normalize sour brewing over here.
Oh, yeah.
And I think really at the time they were kind of paving the way for the rest of us. And so, the culture is awesome out there. Definitely in Boulder, where I lived, is a little bit of a party town, and it's easy to get lost in that. So, but then going out to Virginia, I mean, a completely opposite dynamic. Like there is some awesome breweries out in Virginia, and there's some really cool ones that are doing some experimentation. Great Valley Farms being one of them. They grow most of what they use in their beers on the farm there.
Oh, cool.
And that's kind of one of the more experience oriented breweries that they have out there, but. At that time, you know, we didn't really know about them, so we never went there. But my best friend still lives out there, and that's one of his favorite places to visit. But
do you go back sometimes?
I have not gone back to Virginia yet. I DJ'd him and his brother's weddings down in Arizona.
So DJ? Hold on. Are you a DJ on the side?
I spent some time as a DJ. I still am. But
get out of here.
It's definitely a little bit more of a hobby now than it is a job.
So define this DJing. Are we doing like what? Certain genres? What's going on?
I was a club DJ for a long time when I was younger.
That'd be fun.
Get out of here.
Electronic music. I mean, open format was kind of my favorite to play, just mixing in different genres. I felt like there was a challenge to that.
You still fuck with that here and there?
100%.
Get out of here. Do you have any gigs here and there?
That's not something I'm looking at right now. I do get sucked into some friends' weddings here and there, and that's always fun. You know, I'm happy to like, hey, I'll DJ your wedding as a gift. Like,
Chad,
you know,
we do some parties sometimes. We should hit up Sean.
Well, with brewers, there's always some other art that they're into. Something, you know, there's always some sort of hobbies that they do. So what I found is a lot of us are musicians, too. So, you know, I think we need to get a Salt Lake, a Utah brewery band.
Underground brewery-like stuff?
I just saw that space you have right over there, and that's the first thing I said to Dave. Like, how do we get a party going here? Let's do a private craft brewers party.
Oh, man, I get rowdy up in here, Chad.
Sign me up. I'll DJ 100%.
I'm going to write this down because this is awesome. I love that. So then in Utah, when you came back to Utah, hung out with Sammy, what did you do?
Went back to school pretty much right away.
Where at?
So I was at Salt Lake Community College.
Okay.
So studying biochemistry and chemical engineering. And I have ADD, and so I am not the best student. I don't like taking medication for it, and so I just write it out. But I honestly, I feel like ADD can kind of be really advantageous to a lot of brewers because, I mean, so much of your life is multitasking. It's just learning how to multitask in a controlled manner, I guess, you know.
You've
got six things going on in your brain at once. If you can figure out a way to organize those, it's like, all right, we got the CIP going here. We're mashing in, you know, all these different things. I think it's again, can be really advantageous.
Okay, so then you were going to school, and then when it happened in school, you started homebrewing, right?
So I actually started homebrewing when I was 19, living in Colorado.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
The girl that I was dating at that time bought me a homebrew kit, and it was just one of the Mr. Beer kits.
Classic.
And yeah, so at 19, I just moved out there. I wasn't old enough to go to bars, so it was tough to meet people, and so I didn't want to be asking the only two 21-year-olds I knew to constantly be buying me beer. So I was like, hey, I can just buy the supplies and make it on my own, and nobody ever cards me.
That's
so so it kind of just became like I did it initially just to be able to get a buzz on the weekends or whatever, and then it slowly grew into something much larger than that, obviously.
So. Yeah, so what did you what was some of your first homebrews ever?
My first homebrew was the plain and easy Mr. Beer Pale. Just, I want to say... I can't remember the exact name of it, but it was just their pale ale, and I was. It felt so good to get drunk off of something you made. Like I felt like the
best
buzz.
Beer ever.
Yeah,
I made it.
I mean, yeah, like obviously you have that serious bias heading into it, but like just like the inherent buzz that you get off of something that you created, I feel like is so much better. And so that was kind of, I guess, the seed that started this whole thing.
What did you name it? I'm curious now.
Oh man, I got really stupid with all the names. I mean, eventually I got really tired of the pre-hopped malt extract kits that they made. So I started bringing my own hops, my own yeast into it. And then eventually I just gave up on their kits altogether and just started using, you know, dry malt extract. And I brewed in a cupboard for like 7 years.
Dude.
That was the biggest space I had. It was like, all right, we got some room in a cupboard. Let's stick it in there and hope it doesn't make a mess. And thankfully never got too messy, but yeah, so kind of push those Mr. Beers to, I think, the brink.
Good.
And back and learn you can actually make some great beer out of those. Like, good. You just got to get a little creative.
Did Sam like beer? Does she like beer?
She is not the biggest beer fan, okay, but she entertains me. So
that's important.
Yeah. Like, you know, if I'm really stoked on something, I'll have her try some of it. And she tends not to like bitter beers,
okay,
which is really ironic because one of the beers that I've given her that she really liked was Dogfish Head's 120 Minute.
Oh, hey.
And so she has this stigma in her head. She doesn't like bitter beers. Then I give her the 120 Minute. She's like, ooh, that's quite nice. And I was like, what? What? I'm sorry? You actually like that? Are you being sarcastic here?
Yeah.
But yeah, she actually really did enjoy it. I gave her some Pliny a few months back and she was like, yeah, that's good. I get it. And I was like,
there's a beer
so weird
for everybody. I always say this. There's a beer for everybody.
Yeah. So I'm still trying to find that line as to what she does and doesn't like, but I guess if you just cram a bunch of hops in there every 2 minutes, maybe she'll like it. So
that's the same with Holly. Like every once in a while, like, you know, Holly doesn't like certain beers up the bat, but if I get her to try it and break it down, oh, I like this beer. Uh-huh. Because you're thinking outside of, like, don't judge a book by its cover or judge the beer by its suds. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
You just got to try it. It's good going. If you don't like it, because that rye pilsner doesn't like rye, but when Matt made that rye pilsner, she loved, one of her favorite beers of all time was Matt's rye pilsner.
That's a great beer.
And she hates rye. What? Favorite beer.
There's a beer out there for everyone.
Amen. Oh, yeah. Amen. So you have a couple others over here. So why do you brought these? Because they're award-winning?
I did. I just brought these down. I mean, I know so many people have had pretty much all of our beers. I think we're really consistent, and that's a big strength of ours. So, yeah, I just thought I'd bring the medal winners down, and we could.
Chad, you want to open one of these?
Have some fun with those.
Oh, all right. We've got the Devastator and the Hell's Keep.
Let me say something about the Hell's Keep real quick. Shitty label. Bring back the old one. That's all I'm going to say.
I think the label's awesome, man.
I love the old labels that they did.
The old label, I think, is the best.
The old Devastator Porter label was much better.
You're like, Sean, I mean, you've been working there since the new rebrand.
Yeah.
So are you kind of biased towards the new rebrand?
You know, I like the rebrand, I'll be honest. Okay. I think the color palettes that they went with and kind of the redesigns that they did, I think were really advantageous, especially in this market.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's looking for loud labels right now. And so I think you kind of have to be in that game to be able to stay in it. So,
yeah.
Well, these are now like being distributed nationally, maybe internationally now?
I'm not sure about internationally. I wouldn't be surprised, but I definitely know they are being distributed nationally, which is awesome. It's kind of a cool thing to be able to, you know, go out of state and order one of our beers and be like, eh.
Still struggling with Polygamy Porter and somewhere back east, they're trying to get Polygamy Porter. I want to say it was Virginia, but
I'm not sure.
Maybe it was one of the Carolinas. They couldn't get, I don't know.
It's like, inkling of something just popped up in my head. That it could be a Carolina.
Like, they either couldn't bring the beer in or they had to change the name of it or something. Might have been North Carolina.
To Multiple Wives Porter?
Yeah.
What do you call it? What do you call it? At that point, what do you call it?
It's okay here in Utah. They give us the most shit out here. So.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the F Porter. It's not the LDS Porter. It's the FLDS Porter.
FLDS Porter. God.
There
you go. I'm excited to try this one. It's been a minute.
I love this beer. This is, I think, probably our favorite beer that we make.
My favorite beer
that we make. Again, I love what yeast can do. I love a good Belgian.
Nice Belgian nose on that.
Oh, that's nice.
A little slight bubblegum on that. I like that.
Those nice fruity esters in there. Like, it is amazing what yeast can do. What you can.
You changed the yeast on that, didn't you? We're not going to talk about shop, but that's a different yeast. I like this a lot.
I think it's a great beer. I honestly, ooh, I love this.
What's the
I
can ABV drink on this one? Beer.
7.75, I think.
7 and change?
7.75.
Oh, yeah. Give me this. It crushes all day.
Yeah.
Oh, I can make that's a candle nice out of this. I hate saying that, but I can.
No.
Yeah.
Minus the whole, like, Big Bird dragon guy. Like, let's get rid of that guy.
I want to brew this beer more frequently. That'd be awesome. I love this beer. So, please, drink it.
What about it's barrel great aging this beer?
You know, I played around with it a little bit myself since I got to Squatters. We had a little employee party. It was a lot of fun. So I did a little private firkin for that.
Oh, nice.
Did some brandy barrel oak chips and some amber Belgian candy sugar.
Did you know?
And it was really nice. Yeah. I think McKean took home a few crowlers. So that's always a nice compliment.
Oh, that's huge. Yeah. That's huge, Sean.
It was definitely pretty strong, though. I had to wait about 5 hours after a glass of it before I could drive home.
But, oh, wow. Because you live up north, right?
I live in Bountiful. Yeah.
Wow. So you like making that transit to SLC?
You know, at 4:30 in the morning when I'm driving into work, it's really not that bad.
Oh, there's nobody on the
traffic
road.
On the road, that's and nice. Thankfully, you know, getting off that 10-hour shift, there's, again, no traffic headed back.
Right.
So that's really nice. Yeah.
That's cool.
One of the pluses about being a brewer is, you know, thankfully we don't have to deal with too
so
much
you're
traffic,
enjoying your time so, here at Suarez and Wasatch right
absolutely
now.
Loving it, honestly.
So how'd you get that job?
So, you know, after Toasted, was kind of going through the rough patch, not sure where everything was going to go. I spoke with Sage, and he said, you know, maybe it's time to start applying something a little bit more permanent, because we weren't really sure what that transition was going to look like. And so sent out a few applications, talked to a few different people, did get a couple offers, but nothing was really kind of what I needed. I mean, I was happy to take some of the offers if nothing else popped up.
Sure.
But as far as what I needed, I want some full-time. I really wanted something with benefits if possible. I know that's a rarity in the beer scene. But yeah, so, you know, I did get a job offer from one of the places that I applied. I'm not going to drop their name now, but they offered it to me and said, hey, we're going to offer it to you. We need to know by Friday, though. I'm going to pull the job posting. And I think it was a Monday or a Tuesday at that time. And I had put the application into Wasatch and Squatters. And that was kind of the one I was holding out hope for, just knowing the consistency and the reliability that they bring to the table. And on Wednesday evening, I got an email back from Wasatch Squatters from our brewery manager, David Miller. And he just said, hey, we'd love to chat. And I was like, yes, finally. So I was like, can we chat tomorrow? Like, these guys are kind of waiting on an answer. And I'm a pretty open, honest guy. I don't like to hide things. So I'm very forthcoming with that type of stuff. And went in and had the chat with them. And I was like, hey, so just so you guys are in the loop on everything, I do have an offer. They want to know an answer by tomorrow. So if you could at least let me know by tomorrow whether you're, you know, maybe leaning towards hiring me or not hiring me, that'd be great. And then I got the offer the next day. And so
nice.
It was hell awesome. Yeah, it was Sean. Happy.
Yeah, so I was really stoked. Sad that I had to turn that other opportunity down, but
yeah,
you know, I know they're doing just fine without me.
Good. Well, I want you to know that from everyone I've talked to, everyone at the co-op fucking loves you, dude. Seriously. Yeah. I'm not just kissing your ass. Like, how's Sean doing? Oh, I love Sean. Like, that's, I swear that's the response to everyone, man.
That's so awesome to hear.
You're doing great, man, and I'm glad you're there.
Yeah, and I'm glad I'm not annoying everybody.
It's nice knowing
ADD comes out, for sure.
Sure, but I'm glad you're here to be a part of a great team.
Yeah.
It's a great caliber of team.
I'm honored.
It's been awesome watching you go from, because I would come in with your small batch and drink your small batches at Toasted Barrel and see you go from like one of Salt Lake's smallest breweries to one of our biggest breweries. So
yeah, top three for sure.
Yeah, excited to see what you do over there.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. So Sean, we keep talking about this Toasted Barrel thing. Can we talk about this real quick?
Yeah.
So Toasted Barrel was, I'm going to say was, right? Is that,
past tense now?
Right? Okay, so Toasted Barrel was one of the small breweries that opened up a couple years ago. And as far as I know, it was on just north of
Red Rock
and Mountain West. Yeah. And it was a little small. You guys had a little home brew set up, right?
Yeah.
So talk to me about, like, how did you get hooked up with Toasted Barrel? What was Toasted Barrel? What happened there? What's going on?
So I was working at Park City, the ski resort up at the time.
Okay.
And when Toasted Barrel opened up, that was when I was really developing my love for sours and barrel-aged sours and barrel-aged beers in general. And, Toasted just happened to be a really convenient stop off of 600 North on my way home back to Bountiful. And so I just frequently, you know, once or twice a week, I'd stop there, grab some beers, head back. And then eventually I started bringing them my home brews and kind of tongue in cheek, being like, "Hey,
just on your own, just bring them your home brews."
Yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, I like their beer so much, I wanted them to think highly of mine. Yeah. You know, and so I kept bringing them my beers, and after maybe 6 months or so, you know, again tongue in cheek, being like, "Hey, I'm ready to brew for you as soon as you're ready to have me," but I wasn't really fully planning on switching over careers anytime soon. Right. But after, again, about 6-8 months, I came in one day and Sage was working the bar, and I was there for our bourbon barrel quad, which is still,
Oh wow.
Okay. So our bourbon barrel quad, which is still one of my favorite all time beers. Absolutely love that.
That
beer.
One smacks. You brought that to the Utah Beer Fest last year.
At the Gateway.
I remember that.
And that one was smacked.
We were all like right there in a row.
It was Toasted Barrel, Strap Tank, and Hopkins. And it wasn't Sage. Who was it?
Lynn.
Yeah. So Lynn was like, "You gotta try this." I'm like, "Let's try it real quick."
I drank a lot of that night. Oh, it was so good. It was so smooth.
There's no way that was a quad.
15%?
Yeah, 15%. I mean, I think that was one of the big selling points for a lot of the people at the festival that come up, is they just saw a 15% beer and they were like, "Holy cow, like what? 15%? I gotta try this."
Didn't taste like a 15%, man.
Oh, no. Yeah. It was super drinkable.
Yeah, dangerous. It is a dangerous beer. Getting back to the point here, sorry, ADD rant there. I came in for the bourbon barrel quad. I was planning on just tasting like an ounce of it so I can decide if I want to get some bottles to go. And Sage said, "Are you here for the BBQ? And I said, "Oh, you know it." And BBQ. All of a sudden he's walking back out with the max amount that we could pour, a full pint. And I was like, "Oh crap." So I text my wife and I said, "Hey honey, I guess I'll be getting a little drunk here. I'll see you in a little while."
Oh, hell yeah.
And, when I was about towards the end of that pint of a 15% beer, let's see, we've had 15 and 16% releases. I think that was the 15% at that time. Sage comes up to me and I'm pretty smashed at this point. And he goes, "Hey, so I had some of your beers." I was like, "Oh, okay." He goes, "I loved them. Are you still interested in working for us?"
Hell yeah.
I was
like, "No way.
Hell yes. I'm absolutely interested in working for you." So I was working full time at the ski resort. I was a supervisor for the lift operations department there. That was a pretty full-time gig. We were working about 60 hours a week. And that was in a 4 or 5 day span.
Did you get to do some runs while you were doing that?
Yeah, I got a couple runs in here and there. That's kind of like why I wanted to go up there in the first place, was to do a little bit of snowboard, and that ended up becoming a byproduct of working there. But,
nice.
So with the little spare time I had, I started working at Toasted. So I was there maybe 1 or 2 days a week at most until... we got our short staffing that happens, you know, with everybody, especially the ski resorts. And so we had to go to like a mandatory 5-6 days a week. And at that point, shit. I was like, okay, I need a little break from Toasted. I want to spend some time with my wife, hang out with my friends, you know, actually have a little bit of a social life outside of work.
Right.
And so I took a little bit of time off in the middle of the winter from Toasted. But then when March rolled around, COVID hit. And so we all got laid off up at the resort, and I was like, "Well, I guess this is the perfect time. Let's do this." And went full time into the craft beer industry. So nice. I feel like I came in at a rough time for like meeting people and branching out.
And that was in 2020, right?
That was 2020. Yep. March 2020 is when I started working full time at Toasted Barrel.
Nice.
And never looked back.
Like, that's awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, from day one, I was like, "Yeah, this is what I want to do."
So could you say you were the head brewer, or like the big? The most brewing brewer in TB history?
No, I wouldn't say absolutely. Not when I started. When I started, I was just assistant. Like they were teaching me everything. Like I said, I was a home brewer. You know,
so Lynn and Sage both brewing at the same time?
Yes,
they would both teach you.
Yeah, correct. Cool. So you know, Lynn would be there some days. Sage would be there other days. Sage is a full time firefighter, so he obviously had a full time job elsewhere. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
We're blowing
out some of my favorite beers of all time here. I just learned as much as I could from them, you know.
That's
and,
really cool.
It's really awesome because, you know, they were kind of a similar circumstance coming from being home brewers, not necessarily having the professionally trained experience. You got to say one thing about home brewers, they can get really crafty and creative. It's not always just one solution to a problem.
And I feel like that's something you really liked about the Toasted Barrel. I'm speaking out of my own ass, but I feel like you liked that about Toasted Barrel because you had complete creative freedom.
Yeah.
Like 100%. You could do whatever the fuck you want, and you could do it the way you wanted to do it, and as long as it didn't suck, they're like, "Yeah, send it. Let's go."
Yeah, yeah.
So you tell us a story upstairs, which we're going to keep to ourselves, but like you made a certain beer and it was supposed to be one way, it came out another way, and it was one of a beautiful happy mistake, if you will.
We can say like it. I don't mind.
Me and my sisters
it.
Happy mistake. You know what I mean? That's just like one of those like it's awesome.
Yeah,
and that's really cool because if you were to mess up like that in a big scale upscale brewery, I feel like it'd be like, nope, you didn't do it by the book.
Mm-hmm.
Dump it. What?
Yeah, but that's kind of speaking a little bit more to the, you know, the art versus science and the spectrum that it falls between.
Yeah.
I mean, I think brewing beer is, you can take it as much either direction as you want. And I think mm-hmm. that's one of the beautiful things about it is there's, you know, you look at a lot of the old traditional brewers, like the Norwegian farmhouse brewers and stuff, and it's,
oh, yeah?
It's all just, yeah, they're doing it the way that they know and doing it the best that they can. And I just think there's something inherently magical about that. And, you know, that's another one of the big things that draws me to craft beer. I mean, you can go to so many different places in the world and ask what beer is to them, and you're going to have a million different answers.
Yeah, because it resonates with the artist.
Yeah, exactly.
Totally does. Yeah. So, Toasted Barrel, he came out with a bunch of cool... Yeah, I think he had some of the coolest unique labels, by the way, at Toasted Barrel.
That awesome labels.
Really did.
Shout out to Rachel Kozlowski.
Is that who it was?
She's an incredible artist. Yeah,
she did all of our
labels.
Oh, yeah, we shot with her. I sat with her at the bar at Toasted a couple years ago.
Really?
Yeah, I was just sitting there. She's like, oh, I do the artwork here. And I'm like, this is the coolest fucking artwork.
It really is, though. Yeah. You could have made great shirts and great posters with that.
Oh, yeah. She's just so talented and so humble. It was an absolute pleasure getting to meet her and hang out with her.
Let's
I actually got a commission of my dog for my wife for Christmas a couple of years ago.
Get so out like, of here.
The same style that we did our label art in. Yeah. I have a painting on our mantle,
man.
Of our dog Pizza.
I want to see a picture of that. Send it to me.
Yeah, he's got little pizzas on his bow tie. It's about the cutest thing ever.
Man, I love that.
I was totally trying to downplay the whole gift that year because I was like, honey, it's COVID. You know, my hours got cut.
I'm too sick to give
you
something.
I'm going to do what I can to get you a good gift, knowing that I had this awesome thing lined up. And finally on Christmas Eve, I was like, I can't fucking wait anymore. Let's just do it. Open your present. And she just started crying when she opened it. And I was like, yes, it was a happy cry. She was like, yes, this is the best. So yeah, that was, I think, definitely the best gift I've ever gotten her. And immortalized pizza for sure.
What were some of your favorite memories of Toasted Barrel? Because as far as I know, Toasted Barrel is no longer a place ever, right? RIP?
So from what I understand, they did sell to new owners. So one of the new owners that I believe bought it is a current brewer for Ballast Point. So I'm not exactly sure what their beer is going to look like going forward from here. And again, I'm not fully filled in on the situation, but from what I understand, that is what's going on.
And you were at one point let go of Toasted Barrel, and then you went and had the job at Squires and Watch. That's where you're currently at, correct?
Yeah, and I wouldn't so much say let go from Toasted Barrel. It was just we were kind of reapplying for all of our licensing and stuff, and a little bit unsure about the direction of everything. And so, yeah, I don't know, that's, you know, going back to say, just came up, said maybe it's time to look for something a little bit more permanent.
Sure.
And I that's really what I needed at the time. You know, it's easy to let your passion get overworked in this industry.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, and having all that creative freedom that you were speaking about, that was addicting. Honestly, it was addicting. Like
I
just
bet.
To kind of get an idea and run with it and see what happened and then be able to serve that to people. And, it is a really cool feeling. I mean, I know you guys know that feeling as well.
Because we're small enough where we're not in a production scale, where we can still have that creative freedom to a degree.
Oh, yeah, 100% here. Like, we just do whatever we want.
Because, Chad, you're moving beers left and right. You're going through them so quick that you can brew them multiple times at different rates, different aspects, and you can experiment a lot, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how many versions of Friendly have you done?
Almost 30.
Right.
And I had somebody ask me, one of my new cooks today, he asked me, he's like, so what are your staple beers? I'm like, if we had staple beers, I wish we could. Like, we just have so many different beers we like to brew.
Yeah.
And
but it's hard because you get a lot of...
keep them on.
Bring them back, right?
Yeah.
They're always rotating.
I can only brew so many, like, every so often. Like,
I know Drew will like this with a steak ale, staple beer.
Oh, yeah.
Steak ale?
Shit, here we go. Sorry, Drew. But yeah, so steak ale. So Matt did a Worcestershire.
We're kind of, all right, let's do steak ale. Let's fuck around with it. And yeah, Worcestershire, horseradish, peppercorn. And this is Matt. This is, you know, homebrewer. This is a guy that started working for me as a homebrewer and just passionate. Knew how to put recipes together, just, you know, put the work in. And so now he's the brewer here, and he
did that steak ale. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, man? I'm like, all right, let's do it. And it turned out awesome. And he's brewed it 2 to 3 times now.
Yeah.
And people ask for it. I'm like,
because when you smell it, it's like, oh shit. Like, what? It smells like the sauce. Like, and I'm not going to drink this. No. Yeah. But when you drink it, it still tastes like a beer. That's the best part of it.
It's still drinkable.
Still tastes like a beer.
A 5%, you know, so, just drinkable ale.
The first time, the first release, I'm like, no way. I came in, I made Derek try it, and Derek's like, I'm not fucking trying this. I'm like, oh, yeah, you are. I will buy this for you. If you don't like it, I'll drink it. He smells it. He's like, ugh. I remember his face. It's like, it was like disgust, right? Just drink it. Try it one time. Finish the whole pint. Got a second one. He liked it so much. Yeah, that's right, motherfucker. Yeah, try it. Like, it goes back to like, something could smell some a certain way or taste a certain way, but as long as you enjoy it, doesn't matter. And so... That's why it was a poke of fun at Shades, but at the same time, like, Shades makes delicious tasting beer. And it,
I mean, they just
people,
won 3 World Beer Cups.
I mean, like, excuse me.
The spaghetti beer. I'm not going to lie. When I heard that they were doing that, I was
weird.
Like,
Taco Tuesday
what?
Beer, right, Shamrock Shake
but then
beer.
I tried it.
Their Michelada is so good.
But it brings people who wouldn't drink beer. It opens their palate to craft beer, and I'm okay with that. I love that. Like, yeah. Hey, wait a second. I can like a beer? Yes, you can. And I think Shades is a great gateway drug to beer. I really do.
Not everybody can be like my wife and like 120 Minute. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the first beer that they like.
Exactly. So, Sean, we brought a Toasted Barrel beer we got to try. And then Chad has a special beer for you. But before we break this down, we're going to take a quick break. And then we're going to go down this Toasted Barrel rabbit hole.
Right on.
Sound good?
Sounds great.
Chad, sound good?
Sounds excellent.
Okay. 1 second, my friends. A quick shout out to one of our most supportive sponsors, Hopkins Brewing Company. Located within the heart of Sugar House at 1048 East, 2100 South in Salt Lake, Hopkins has a wide variety of awesomeness, such as trivia nights on Tuesdays, incredible local live jazz Wednesday and Thursday nights, small batch beers on Friday, made by a local legend of a brewer, Matt Yeager, and brunch on the weekends. Hopkins is the place to be. They got awesome swag, you gotta go. All their food and beer is made from scratch with local and sustainable ingredients. While visiting Hopkins and upon checkout, use the code TASTEMASTERS to receive 15% off your ticket order, excluding alcohol, of course. That's right. Use the code TASTEMASTERS to receive 15% off one of the hottest spots in Utah. Oh, yeah, Chad. You sound great. Always
I'm
sound
good?
Great.
All right.
Well, cheers. We went down a Toasted Barrel rabbit hole, oh, kind of. And I don't know how many Toasted Barrel beers are left, but Sean, I have one.
Here.
So we have a blue wax dipped spontaneous fermented beer in front of us, right?
Hand bottled, hand labeled, hand dipped.
Get out of here. So tell us about this one there, Sean.
So this is one of our spontaneous cultures. So this started out as a, I'm trying to remember. We were doing a brew and we didn't have the yeast pitch that we needed. And this is kind of in that off period that I was in, when I was working at the ski resort still. And so, yeah, we didn't have the yeast to pitch. So the plan was, I guess, to let it hang out overnight, boil it again a little bit in the morning, and then pitch the yeast and go from there. I know it sounds wacky, but Lynn came back and it was fermenting. Go figure. That's what happens with sugar water, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, so they just decided to throw it in some barrels and see what happened. And it turned into this awesome spontaneous. So
what kind of barrels did you throw it in?
To be honest, I can't remember what barrels we had this one in. I know with our other culture, we specifically did white and red wine. I think there was just a red table wine barrel, and then the other was a Chardonnay barrel, I believe. And those had some really awesome, unique characteristics. I mean, obviously the cultures went a little bit of their own way in the actual fermentation, but the characteristics that you got from the woods themselves was pretty cool. So,
Chad, when's the last time you had a spontaneous fermentation beer?
I drink them a lot. So they're some of my favorite beers.
From TB, did you ever have one from TB?
Hello?
From Toasted Barrel, did you ever have one over there?
Oh, yeah. I had this beer. Sage brought me a bottle of this shortly after they bottled it.
Oh, shit. So, yeah. So let's see how different it tastes.
You're not drinking it to get drunk. You drink it for the gut health. It's good live probiotics.
Oh, yeah. This is very good for you. Yeah. Beer is good for you, by the way.
Oh, what? Sean, do you mind doing the honors and opening this for us?
I would love to.
Like it would be a lie if we opened it.
When did you guys bottle this?
I want to say about 2 years ago, honestly.
I want to say it was 2020 when Sage brought me a bottle of this.
I think it was late 2020.
Look at that waxy goodness as you're peeling off.
Wax, pain in the ass.
Wow. To get it in the beer itself there.
Oh, man. I'm kind of excited for this.
It doesn't have the same sound effect as the
I'm kind of scared.
Can pop, but.
So was did this one have a name there, Sean, or this,
so this
one just
is our To Be Toasted? We had a couple different names that we used for our spontaneous beers. The original was To Be Home, which I am actually still working on getting a tattoo of that beer because that beer means a lot to me. That was the last beer that I shared with my grandmother before she passed away. So not only was it beer, a beer that I love from the very conception, now I have a sentimental reason to get it tattooed. So
that's beautiful. Nice. Hey, cheers, my friend.
Cheers. Cheers. This is a lovely surprise.
Surprise, mm-hmm. motherfucker. That's how much I love you.
Oh, man.
Oh, that is tart. This is great. This is aged very well.
I would agree 100%. This is this is another, I'd say, top 10 beers of all time.
This is aged very well.
Not nice. Bad, my man.
I get that said that really nice, like green apple, but it's not the acetaldehyde green apple. And I say it every time, but our spontaneous cultures, I get this weird, like, ever had true pink peppercorns? That fruitiness that you get.
Oh, yeah.
Take that spice away, but that fruity factor. There was something about that in our spontaneous cultures that kind of embedded itself really well. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like you say, it's tart, but it's not like off-putting tart.
No. There's a nice kind of like nuttiness on the aroma, too. Like slight sherry notes. Like hazelnut.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of get that, the cassia, like sour nose bite from it.
Let me see that.
It's not that plantarum smoothness. It's more that cassia bitey sour nose.
But it's clean. Like, your palate's clean after that, and then you're ready to take another sip, and it's... Now that I've had a few sips, it's not as intense.
We made some pretty sour beers at Toasted. This is definitely not the most sour that we made, but I could drink this every day. Like I said,
this is great.
I love my sour beers.
I'm glad we've aged this for a while. Like, I've been sitting on this for a long time.
I mean, I get the thing I experience about a lot of spontaneous beers lately is THP, tetrahydropyridine. It's like kind of like Cheerio thing, and it's just a hint of it at the end. Which is not bad at all. Like, it's not a bad flavor. But that means this thing could age even more and be even better.
This aged great, honestly. I've had a few bottles of this in the past, I don't know, year, 18 months or so. That got pretty ethyl acetate-y, got a little solvent-y. And I think I got lucky, as I perceive a lot of ethyl acetate as kind of that pair. I definitely get the solvent if it's in really high concentrations, but in low concentrations, I get a nice, slightly solventy pear note out of it, which is really nice, but I'm barely getting anything in this. So that's
this is great. David, did you keep this in the fridge?
No.
Did not. Cellar temp?
Cellar temp.
Nice.
Yep.
Yeah, it's done well. So anybody that has a bottle of this, I'd say hold on to it for another year and then... And pop it open. This is great.
It broke my heart to want to bring this, but I thought, you know what? The one person I want to share this with would be the Sean himself.
It means the world. It means the world.
So I actually left us. Here's a quick story. I left us at the house, had to leave work to go get it from the house and come back up here.
Oh, shit.
God damn, I was so pissed.
I think it was well worth it,
God
though.
God damn it. It was so well worth it. This is the reaction I wanted. I wanted to see what you guys thought, and I wanted to break this down because this is... Sean, I came to Toasted Barrel because of you, man. That's the only reason why I came. Seriously, like, I only came to talk to you, man. And I'm glad we did, because, like, that's when we met, and that's where you and I have a great friendship, and you and I hit each other up for great reasons, and it's always bro hugs since we've seen each other. Like,
yeah, 100%.
It's always good times, man. And this is an example of, like, I wouldn't want to share this with anyone else besides you two. Like, this makes sense. Like,
it means the world.
Yeah, dude.
I've had a couple people bring back, some of the stuff that I actually brewed personally at Toasted. Like, we did a barrel-aged Belgian waffle triple.
Oh, yeah.
That was fantastic. And one of the employees at Wasatch Squatters was like, hey, I had that Belgian waffle triple. I got like 6 more bottles of it at home, actually. Do you want one? I was like, yes, please. I drank all of mine. Like, it was so good. Everybody that came That's over to my great. House, I was like, try this. Like, really proud of that beer. It's a really cool thing getting beers that, you made or you were a part of to circle back to years later. And you're like, oh, not only is this drinkable, but this is fantastic.
You know, so what is, that, really what is well. That? What is the time at Toasted Barrel? Would you ever take that back, even though it was a short period of time in your life?
Would I take it back? Absolutely not. No. I think that was kind of the beginning of, stepping into this world that I love now. I feel like a lot of adults out there, can probably relate to this. But for, my early 20s, mid-20s, I really kind of drifted through. I mean, I tried so many different majors in college. I never knew what I wanted to do. At one point, I was a business management major. And then the next semester, I was a computer science major. And I've always, again, kind of rolling back to the ADD thing, I've always had a really broad, a wide breadth of interests. A lot of things sound really exciting to me, and then I actually get into the weeds of it, and I'm like, oh, I don't like this so much. Like, computer science sounded like so much fun, but then I actually started coding, and I was like, man, this is repetitive. I don't like this. Oh, it's so hard. Monotonous. Where's this freaking bug? Like, So I kept hopping from major to major, but beer is that thing that I landed on that I was like, this is it. This is what I want to do. This is what I've been waiting for. This is that perfect blend of art and science that I've always been wanting.
You brought that up multiple times, art and science. Which one do you think is more important, the art or the science?
Whatever one you want to make more important, honestly. I think that's, again, the magical thing about brewing. I mean, you can have brewers that fall anywhere on that spectrum that are making great beers. And, I think it's really helpful, obviously, to know what's going on the scientific end. And I think that's a really valuable asset to have when you're experimenting and trying to push the limits. I hear people say all the time, well, somebody's brewed that, come up with a crazy idea. Oh, somebody's definitely done that out there. But have people really done everything? I don't think so. Like, I'm working on some really interesting things right now that didn't originally pan out as I had intended them to, but it's turning into something really cool that I'm really excited about. And I don't necessarily think it's things that people have tried before. So
that's really cool. Have you stopped home brewing since you went to Squatters and Wasatch?
I took a little bit of a break. I am currently looking at home upgrading my home brewing system. Those new Anvil foundries are so awesome. I've been brewing on a Brewer's Edge mash and boil for a long time. Just the 7.5 gallon one.
Mash and boil is the way to go.
Got great mileage out of it. I mean, I think it's a $300 system from the get-go, and it's everything you need, basically. Basically, you need you need some cold side equipment on top of that. But as far as your hot side, that's pretty much everything. If you got a stove to heat water up on, you're set.
Oh yeah.
And so my home brewing is pretty archaic. A lot of the time, thankfully I'm to the point now where I actually can have like a dedicated HLT,
nice.
Air quotes,
hot liquor tank.
Yeah, hot liquor tank. Rather than just heating 1 gallon at a time on my stove and pouring it over the grain.
Yeah.
But
Jesus,
I think there's something magical about homebrewing, and just, especially, the 5-10 gallon scale, you can have fun. You can experiment, try new things. If it doesn't go right, who cares?
Yeah. It's no big deal. And again, even if it doesn't go right,
you can potentially turn that into something else really cool.
Right.
And
that's the beauty about what you're doing is I think you had this weird is the wrong word, but you had this fascinating, you went Toasted Barrel, you had complete like arty freedom.
Yeah.
And then you found this new path in Squatters and Wasatch, and it's more honed in scientifically, and you're seeing more of a process that's kind of more repetitive in a way, but you're seeing kind of a different side of it that's more upskilled, more production-y, more like, okay, this is what we really do. You're going to do it multiple times, and it'll get you honed in. So how have you combined both Toasted Barrel experience and Squatters and Wasatch experience?
That's a great question. Honestly, the moving up from a 10 barrel to the 50 barrel system that we have, I mean, it's it's a slight quite a shock.
Difference, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, we have all these 200 barrel fermenters and stuff, so, you know, we're doing a lot of four turn batches.
Big batches.
And for me, that was like, holy cow, we're brewing five batches of beer today. Whereas it toasted, like, a busy week was we were brewing two or three times. That was a busy week for us. And now it's like 4 to 5 times a day. And so
it's pretty much, like, around the clock.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the biggest thing for my brain to adjust to was, okay, we got this batch of beer going, and as soon as the mash tun's empty, we're putting another one right back in there. And I was like, whoa, wait, we're going to have two, almost three beers going on at the exact same time, you know? And that was a little tough for me to wrap my head around at first. But with that being said, we will be getting a pilot system here in July.
Hey,
so we're going to bring back some of that creative and artistic freedom. We have a lot of really talented people at Wasatch and Squatters.
Yes, I mean,
not just in the brewing cellar team, you know, the packaging guys, you know, all the other individuals that really put in the work there. They have some great ideas, you know? And so, like, we're really excited to kind of jump on that, kind of showcase, you know, what the younger guys are capable of doing. Maybe not younger guys, but, you know, just the ones that haven't necessarily had the chance to implement their own recipes on our system and stuff.
Yes, I mean, like, 50 everyone barrels has a voice, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, 50 barrels, I mean, you want to make sure that recipe is right and good, and you know it's going to sell, and, like, you know, that's a whole different thing than brewing 10 or 15 gallons like it was at Toasted. Be like, all right, let's see what we can do with this weirdness.
Yeah. Like we're saying with Chad earlier, you have a chance to brew multiple times where you can get it, you can hone it in, right? But with some of the 200, I mean, that's
rough.
That's a lot of beer. If it's a bad batch of beer, you're sitting on it for quite some time.
I mean, even us being a small 7-barrel brewery, like, we've had a couple batches we've had to dump. Like, it's
to break your heart a little bit.
Yeah, of course. You know, it's like, we put all this work into this time into this thing. Like, we got to let it go. Like, it's just not up to the standards that we want.
First time we ever had a pour, when I was a professional brewer, I had to pour a beer down the drain. I just, like, I almost wanted to cry. I'm like, I'm lying to myself. I can't do this. There's some way I can save it, right? Lactose? Like, I don't know. Like, can we save it somehow?
Pretenomyces.
Right, yeah. Put it in barrels
and
just
say, yeah,
I've done that before with some homebrewers.
Brett is amazing. I mean, just in its ability to convert, like, unwanted off flavors into something good.
It'll chew up all the things.
Yeah.
And that's why Derek said to me, he goes, I'm never going to put my name behind a bad beer. And that has resonated with me forever since he told me that.
It's okay to dump beer as a brewer.
And after that one batch we had to dump, it took me a good solid probably week and a half to be like, okay, I think I know why. I get it. But I was mad. I was legit mad. Like, I was mad at brewing. I was mad at being a brewer. I was mad at Derek. Like, I was mad at everyone. I'm like, fuck this industry. I'm going to dump good beer.
Yeah.
Then I realized I'm not going to put my name behind a bad batch of beer. Yeah, you're right. It's
a great learning experience.
Yeah, it was humbling. Humbling. Yeah. So, Sean, you've been, you know, Toasted Barrel, Squatters and Wasatch. Who do you look up to in the Utah craft beer scene?
That is a wonderful question. I mean, just coming on board at Wasatch and Squatters, I think there's so much talent. You know, just everybody in there has so much talent. And, you know, McKean is there to answer my super weird specific science questions and stuff like that. And you know, David Miller has been an awesome guy coming in from I think he was at the Brevard Oscar Blues in North Carolina or Deep Elm in Dallas. I'm forgetting. It was one of the two. But yeah, I think that's one of the things that I've really loved about Wasatch and Squatters. I feel like going back to kind of what we were talking about earlier, the more I learn, the less I realize I know.
Good.
And we have the people there that can answer those questions for you. And that's a really awesome thing.
Gotta have a big conglomerate of great brewers over there.
I feel like they get kind of ragged on a little bit because Uinta, Red Rock, Squatters and Wasatch, I feel like get shit on a little bit because they're too big. They're so big that they're not good enough. They kind of sold out. And I said multiple times.
Not always.
They haven't. Yeah. No. There's great individuals and great teams within all of those breweries that are still winning medals, and they're still great people, and they all come to. They support locals still? Like, we're all friends?
They're still our same local friends.
And so I feel like we need to not have this. Just because you're big doesn't mean you're the best and you're too good for us.
Just have a better budget now.
I mean, yeah. But, you know, I mean, because, I mean, look at Nils up in Park City.
He still gets to do what he wants up there.
He gets to do what he wants.
Yeah.
Right? And
Jason Stock.
Jason Stock. Right? But it's the same company. Right? Right. To a degree. Right? Outside of Squaws and Wasatch, Sean, who have you looked up to in the beer, craft beer scene?
You know, again, really great question. I feel like maybe I'm not versed enough and have not met enough people to really be able to fully answer that question. There's a lot of people I look at. Kevin Templin, I think, was one that just comes to mind. I think everybody respects the hell out of Kevin Templin. Dude knows what he's doing. He makes great beer. It's consistent. But I really want to see boundaries pushed. That's kind of my ethos in brewing is do things that people haven't done before. Again, going back to people have tried just about everything you can with beer.
Sure.
But have they really? Like, they've tried everything that we can think of using the current ingredients that we use, but what about pulling some extra enzymes in that may not be a traditional part of the brewing process? You know, what other scientific aspects can we apply to this to try something new and put out a new product or, you know, kind of one of my goals as a brewer, especially being a Utah brewer, is you have your California Common or your Kentucky Common or your New England IPA or your Cascadian Dark Ale or whatever. I would love for Utah to get a designated style that goes into the BJCP. Shit.
Utah.
That is like my goal. It's 5%. Personally. Yeah. Right. So we're actually going back to 3.2 ABW.
Oh my God. Could you imagine?
Let's do it.
A Belgian hazy seltzer. What?
With lactose.
God damn you.
And a note of fennel.
But so because you were saying this multiple times, you're fairly new to the scene. You don't know everyone, right? We don't know everyone, I feel like. But who's someone that you know about that you want to go pick their brain or you want to go meet really bad in the Utah craft beer scene?
You know, overall, I'm going to circle back and go to Mikey Riedel. I think Mikey is such a knowledgeable individual and has so much sway in this community that I definitely think he's somebody to look up to. You know, he's in it for the right reasons. He's here to expand Utah craft beer and let people know what's out there and know that we are a competitor. You know, I'm not super into social media. I do use Reddit because I feel like that's the social media that can be what you want it to be. If you don't want it to be social media, it's not. And that's kind of how I like to use it. But somebody made a post about Utah recently asking, what are some good Utah breweries to stop at? And somebody commented on there, oh, pretty tough to find good beer in Utah. I'd make a stop in Colorado if you're driving out there. And I was like, oh man,
come on.
It's not like I was going to downvote him or fight him or anything like that, but it was like, just kind of led to the thought of people are making great beer everywhere. I can guarantee you can go down to wherever you are in the U.S. You go to your local brewery, they're going to have a great beer, at least one great beer on tap.
Hopefully,
you know,
yeah.
It may not be a gold medal winner, but objectively, it's a great beer. And, you know, I really want to fight that stigma that Utah does not make good craft beer because we make great craft beer.
We have for a long time, too.
Yeah. And if people don't see that or don't want to come enjoy that, then more for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think people take the full strength, high point, whatever. They take that into they don't make great beer. It's like, fuck, in the 90s, like with, you went to and Squatters, Wasatch, they're throwing out some excellent 4% beers, like from the get-go. So,
shout out to Desert Edge, too, for that exact reason. I remember my first Desert Edge beer, I was like, wait, this is 3.2 by weight? What? Yeah,
that Utah Pale Ale.
It was full-bodied, full-flavored. Yeah, it's just a fantastic beer. And so, yeah, I think there's so much to be said for the craft beer scene here. I think a lot of people, just because of the stigma that comes with Utah, like to write it off before they even know anything. But we're doing great work.
You can't
drink
a 10% beer on tap.
yeah.
But at the same time, I want to have multiple beers, not just one, and get fucked up and then try to go home. That's just dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to drink a lot of beer. So I'm okay with that. You know, at least we have 5% instead of 4% now. But
right. I like that. Sean, that was awesome. I like that. I really like that response, and thank you for answering that. It was super cool. When it comes to Utah and craft beer and being inside of it, what drives you? What wakes you up in the morning to still want to be in this industry and push you to be in this industry?
Just going back to that, you know, the first buzz I got off, that first Mr. Beer I ever drank, you know, like there's something so inherently rewarding about being proud of a product that you've created, and not just some cut and paste idea. You know, how many people can go down to IKEA and put together their stuff? Like,
not me. I can tell you that.
just don't lose those little wrenches. I think that's not true.
You're awesome. I love that. What's some goals and future goals you have for you as a brewer in 2022 and past 2022?
Well, I'll start with the past 2022. My best friend in the world, Ryan Larson, he was my college roommate. He is a brewer currently in Virginia. Nice. And I feel like I kind of held his hand going into this whole process. I helped him get into craft beer. And then I started working at a brewery, and then he started working at a brewery, and it's kind of been this goal that we're building together. And it's actually shaping up pretty well right now. So we'd love to open our own brewery someday.
Oh, yeah.
And it works out really well because me and him are both, really into the brewing aspect of everything. His wife is an incredibly talented chef. She went to culinary school. She definitely can make some mean food. And my wife is an accountant, so she really knows the business aspect of everything. And that's something that I don't know. I was lucky enough to grow up around some very successful individuals who had some really successful businesses, and I didn't get a goddamn thing out of it, so I will say, other than being able to wakeboard on their cool boats and stuff like that. But the business aspect of it isn't what necessarily drives me. Like, I understand that beer needs to be profitable, and that's a big part, but I'm still I don't care if this costs a little bit extra. That's what I want to do. You know what I mean? Yeah,
quality.
And yeah, so eventually we're going to open our own brewery.
Halfway between Virginia and Utah? Like, we're talking like Kansas?
So we're kind of looking at the North Carolina area. Okay. Possibly Virginia. We'll see where things go. My wife and I have been looking at some land a little bit outside of Asheville. Just love the area. Really like the temperate growing season that they have there. I'm really big in self-sustainability. So if you can grow as much of your own food as possible, I think that's an awesome and really beneficial thing for everybody.
Definitely.
And kind of what I have told my wife, if we're going to have kids, I want some land to leave them, and I want to teach them how to be able to do these basic things. You know, I'm not some alarmist or some doomsday prepper by any means, but I think in the future with the way that, kind of climate change is heading and stuff, I think those are going to be really valuable skills to have.
And yeah,
so,
that's
awesome. And then again, kind of tying that into, if we can grow the stuff that we're putting in our own beer, or at least as much of it as we can, again, that's even more inherently rewarding. There's this really funny analogy. I DJ, I make music, and somebody made this great analogy. People say a lot of the time, well, using samples is cheating because that's somebody else's sound or music or noise that they've made. But then he goes back to, so I started making my own drums. And then I realized that using other people's leather was cheating. And so I started, raising my own sheep. And ask me how much music I've made lately. I don't know. With all the sheep herding I've been doing, I don't have time to make music anymore. And it's kind of going back to that whole thing. But I think beer is magical in that it can contain so many different things. And it's still beer.
Yeah.
You were talking about the beer flavored beer earlier. But what really defines beer flavored beer? I think that's just a kind of a preset notion that we get from our past experience,
right?
But it doesn't mean that that's where it needs to end.
I like that, Sean. So we're gonna leave you on this. We have three beers in front of us, and I got a question while we pour one of these three beers. So we have the Devastator you brought from, it's Double Block from Wasatch, right? Delicious.
Yes, sir.
Beer. It's an award-winning beer. Then we have a 7% IPA from Strap Tank, which we don't know where that's from. And then Chad brought a Goose. We talked about how that's your favorite style, right?
It is my favorite style.
So, Sean, you are our guest today. Which one of these three beers would you like to end on a good note?
Oh, end on? Oh.
Doesn't matter, brother. Whatever you want.
Let's get that IPA opened up.
Oh, shit. Okay. I'll open it for you on this one.
We'll have time to drink the Goose.
But then I want to ask a question for you. If you had 100% creative freedom and you were the new head brewer at Squaws and Wasatch, what's the first thing you would do?
Oh, man.
Not to call out Libby or Stambaugh by any means, but seriously, if you, what's something that you would bring to the table if Squaws and Wasatch were to give you the hat? What is something that you would bring to that table?
It's a wonderful question. You know, I feel like Wasatch and Squatters, I don't feel like, I know Wasatch and Squatters has a really successful business model going right now. You know, we're distributed all over the nation. That's an awesome thing. And so, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, I really feel like they have something good going and they've made a name for themselves and they really help kind of bring up the Utah craft beer scene in general. But I'd want to open a second location and start doing some funky stuff, to be honest.
Yes.
Bring the bugs in. I'm all about the bugs. And
we need more of that around here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's why Toasted Barrel was really cool, is because they were the ones that everyone kind of looked at like, what the fuck are you doing? But they had the bugs, the funk.
Yeah. Do it.
They
were
different.
Keep going.
Yeah.
I mean, again, kind of going back to like, Brett has the coolest metabolic abilities. I mean,
oh, you know, yeah, it's incredible.
Butyric acid converts to, you know, low levels of ethyl butyrate. So you're turning a pukey, vomity smell into a lovely, sweet pineapple, you know? And I just think...
The irony.
Yeah, I think Brett is just the coolest thing in the world. So, I'm really drawn to the funk and the sour. I have so much respect for the traditional styles. In the right moment, Czech Pilsner is just the best thing in the world. I love a good, you know, mild or ESB. I think Bewilder makes an awesome ESB.
Yes.
I was award-winning.
What?
Yeah, I was brewing ESB. One day at Toasted, and I'll be honest, Bewilder hadn't quite hit my radar at that point. It was still pretty early in their career, and Ross came in, and I was brewing. He's like, you know, here, take this. This is a good, nice post-brew beer, and I was like, okay, cool. And I tried, and I was like, oh, I forgot how much I love a good ESB. I just hadn't had one in so long. And
it's the brewer's beer.
Yeah. So again,
it's one of my
like
first homebrews.
I have all the respect in the world for the traditional styles, and I think, you know, there's always going to be a place for them in the market. But then, you know, again, going back to beer can be just about anything, and I really want to see what else we can do. You know, what are you guys going to do? What are y'all going to bring to the table? You know. And I think that's something we should constantly be asking ourselves. Like,
I like that.
What's the point of beer if not for pushing the limits and trying new things? Like, the culture aspect of beer is one of the biggest things that's really drew me to it in the first place. I mean, you can have five people sitting in a room that all of them speak different languages, but if they're all drinking beer, you know, they can be like, oh, yeah, this one? Yeah, thumbs up. Yeah, this is a good one. They're going to find something in common, you know? And that's kind of the magic of it all.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers to
cheers.
That.
Sean, I love that.
So these 3.5 barrel batches you'll be brewing at the pilot system, will we get to drink those down at the tavern?
I sure hope so. I am a little bit curious as to, you know, I like brewing High Point stuff. I am definitely a little bit more drawn to High Point, not because of the alcohol content, just because I feel like there's a lot more availability for flavor expression, whatever that may be. But, yeah, I am interested to see how we tackle that. So I don't know if it's going to be, you know, 5%. We're just going to do everything in kegs and serve it in the tap room. Or maybe we're going to get a little bottling line. I don't think 100 gallons is worth running on the bottling line that we currently have. Or the canning line, I should say, that we currently have. Those poor guys, they put in such hard work. I would hate to see them do all that prep and canning just for 100 gallons. But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I really think that'll kind of breathe some new life into the awesome brewing and just overall talent that we have down there.
I like that.
This is lovely.
Sean, I think...
this is very nice.
Bringing you on today was a no-brainer. I'm so glad that you gave us the time to sit down and talk. And thank you so much for always, since day one, your pure heart and friendship. It's been beautiful, man. And I've resonated with you since literally the first second I met you. You had no idea who I was when I sat at your bar. You know, over a year ago, and Mikey was right. I think you're one of the most underrated brewers in Utah. I really do. I think he nailed it. I had to meet you because, like you said, he has his voice and he understands what the fuck's going on in Utah. When he said something that verbose, I had to go see who the fuck this Sean guy was. Well, when I met you, not knowing
Sean,
who you were.
Mikey. My name is Sean. I've given him crap. For that,
but
sorry.
You know, when I came and met you, I realized without knowing who you were, I didn't know who you were. I met this bartender at Toasted Barrel. Had no idea that this is the guy I was supposed to meet. And then just hearing how passionate you were about your craft, what you made, what you brought to the table, and you fought tooth and nail to talk about how awesome every single beverage was that were on tap that day. And to this day, you still do that. You do that at Squaws and Wasatch. You do that when you have your friends brews in front of you. You're a great guy, and you're so well-versed. You're so smart. Like, you're well-educated. You're well-versed, and I love that, man.
Means a lot.
You back up behind a pure spirit and a beautiful heart. And that's why Chad and I are like, I told Chad, I'm like, hey, you wanna co-host this episode? Sean from Toasted Barrel / Squaws and Wasatch goes, fuck yeah, I'm there. Like, without, we didn't even hesitate. And because you are someone that everyone should meet in this industry.
Well, I'm honored. Yeah. I look up to both of you guys a lot. You know, I feel lucky to be in your presence doing this. This is a really cool thing.
Nah, it's just
I'm serious,
homies, man.
There's something to be said about imposter syndrome, but you know, I feel like I'm really lucky and really, really grateful to be around the people that I get to be around.
And we feel the same way, because this is the thing about Utah. We make award-winning beer by award-winning brewers, and we're all beautiful souls, and every one of us needs to be heard. And that's our goal here at Tastemasters, to try to hear everyone's story, because everyone, just like you, Chad, myself, everyone else out there, we have a story to tell, and it needs to be heard. So, Sean, on that note, is there anything we can do here at Tastemasters, or are you, Chad and I, is there anything as friends that we can do for you to make your brewing experience, or you as a person, a better person?
Just keep doing you, guys. Like, honestly, like I am so stoked and blessed to be a part of this scene. And I think there's so much potential ahead for all of us, you know,
hell yeah.
Having the ability to do what we do on a daily basis. Like, we're blessed.
Like, hell yeah. Chad, you got anything for us tonight?
No, man. Just a reminder that, you know, it's not just beer. You know, it's all about community out here. So, some good people in our little town here.
It's true. And, gentlemen, we do our best to. I think you guys are great examples of what this is for the community and what we do for the Utah beer scene. And on that note, my friends, until the next beverage.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Kenpai.
Kanpai.
Kanpai.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram at @the_Tastemasters, on Twitter at The Tastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at Fuse _audio.